Everybody, welcome to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm your host, Scott Horton, and our guest today is a computer programmer, a scuba and skydiving instructor, a lecturer on the Constitution, and is the Libertarian Party candidate for President of the United States. His name is Michael Badnarik, and we'll have him on the air here in just a minute. I'm going to bring him on, talk about his campaign for the presidency, and then in the second hour, we're going to talk about Bush's speech to the United Nations and the goings-on in Iraq. We're going to talk about why does terrorism work as a tactic, the Electoral College, oil prices, and all kinds of great things. So stay tuned for that in the second hour of your phone calls. And here in a moment, we're going to go to Michael Badnarik. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure. I should say to the audience, first of all, just to be clear about my conflict of interest, I am a paid employee of the Badnarik campaign. I am paid as a consultant. They're not paying me to do this interview. This is my show, and I just wanted to have Michael on as a guest. So they're not paying me to be a shill, but don't expect me to be too hard on my man here, because I work for him, and I very much want him to win. So now that that conflict of interest is out in the open, Mr. Badnarik, if you had been president on September 11th, 2001, what would your response have been to that attack?
Well, after extending my sincerest sympathies to the victims and survivors of the tragedy, I would have invested as much energy as I can into tracking down evidence to determine who the perpetrators of that tragedy were. It was international crime, and it was a mass murder, and I would have continued to invest American energy into tracking those perpetrators down and bringing them to justice. I understand at this point, at least with my limited knowledge, that those perpetrators were Osama bin Laden and several of members of the Al-Qaeda, which none of whom have yet been brought to trial. Instead, because Al-Qaeda moves around and it's difficult to locate, apparently the current administration has found it more desirable to attack Iraq, which has a defined border. And I think that it's immoral for us to have 150,000 troops there. 92% of the people in Iraq consider us occupiers rather than liberators. And I would, if I were elected, I would bring our sons and daughters home as safely and quickly as possible.
The situation in Iraq seems to be deteriorating quite rapidly. In fact, large sections of the country are not even under American control at all at this point. And it seems the choice is either pull them out immediately without regard to the consequences of a rapid pullout, or kind of keeping an even keel and then maybe pulling out slowly. And then, of course, there's the other option, which is quadruple the number of troops and start the war all over again. I don't suppose you'd be for that one, but is it okay for America to just pack up everything and leave right now with the situation in Iraq the way it is now?
As bad as that option sounds, it is infinitely more desirable than the other two options. Continuing the fight as we are right now continues to increase the threat of terrorism, and it puts American lives and property more at risk rather than less. And the other alternative that you described basically amounts to going into Iraq and killing everybody in that country simply so that we can say no one in Iraq hates us any longer. And that is absolutely an untenable option. So it is unfortunately a tragedy that we are there. It compounds our mistake to leave our troops there. And we have to bring our troops home as quickly as is feasible.
Okay, the guest is Michael Badnarik. It's the Weekend Interview Show. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm your host, Scott Horton, and our guest is the Libertarian candidate for President of the United States, Michael Badnarik. His website is badnarik.org, B-A-D-N-A-R-I-K. Now, Michael, the way to go about fighting terrorism that you prescribe is quite different than the one that we're getting from our foreign policymakers in the United States government right now. And, in fact, they seem to insist, especially the President of the United States, seems to insist that the only way to really fight terrorism is to go and remake that part of the world where the terrorism comes from and create wonderful free democracies so that they won't want to be terrorists against us anymore.
Well, first of all, that ignores the Constitution, which gives us the right to do national defense, but does not give us the authority to do international offense. It also ignores years and years of history which demonstrate that America has failed in every attempt to, create democracy at the point of a gun. Apparently, they've never learned the relationship truths that you cannot force someone to love you. And right now we have, a lot of hatred in the Middle East, and specifically in Iraq. And the American foreign policy that Bush is advocating is to blow up buildings, kill innocent civilians, and apparently he feels that this is going to cause them to, improve their opinion of Americans. I know that you cannot force anyone to love you, and that metaphorically this is very similar to, having a hornet's nest on your property. If you have a hornet's nest on your property, there is a small but finite chance that you will be stung by a hornet. However, if you go down with a baseball bat and start smacking the hornet's nest to try to kill hornets, the chances of being stung are going to increase dramatically.
Yeah, that's a pretty good analogy. And as you said before, what we're doing now is increasing terrorism as the extremists on either side feed off of each other and say, see, we told you what bastards they are.
Well, yes, and it's a really bad situation. I don't know what the genuine motivations are behind the current administration, but I do not believe that they are legitimately in the best interests of American safety.
Also, with this foreign policy adventure that we've been having over the past few years has come what some have termed a war against the Bill of Rights and the Constitution of the United States. I'm thinking immediately of free speech zones, and the Patriot Act's effect on the Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendments. What's your comment on that?
Well, of course, I agree with you, and it has caused me great concern. As I have been campaigning for president over the last 2 years, I've attended several functions at universities, and occasionally I am slated to speak in a large auditorium, which can hold, well over 300 people, and yet there are only 15 to 18 students in the first two rows. And when I asked about the, reason that they didn't choose a smaller classroom so that we could have a more informal conversation, I was told, very candidly that because I was a candidate, I was obligated to speak in the auditorium because it was a free speech zone. And when I questioned them about the rest of the campus and the hallway outside the auditorium, I was assured that those areas were not a free speech zone. And even more horrifying is that when I was watching the Democratic National Convention on television, they showed a free speech zone in Boston, which consisted of a chain-link fence surrounded by razor wire. Now, to me, that was, very reminiscent of concentration camps that we saw in World War II. And certainly, I do not consider that a free speech zone. In fact, I have been very openly telling everyone that would listen that anywhere I happen to be standing, anywhere I happen to be speaking, is a free speech zone because the government does not grant me free speech. I have free speech because I'm willing to exercise that right.
Yeah, the first thing we do when we're born is scream out loud, isn't that right?
Well, that's true. I don't know if that's necessarily an exercise of freedom of speech, but, I certainly believe that, infants do have that right.
On the Fourth and Fifth and Sixth Amendments and the damage that's been done to them by the Patriot Act and so forth.
Well, the Patriot Act is the most egregiously unconstitutional piece of paper ever to come out of Congress since the Alien and Sedition Act. the Fourth Amendment protects your right to privacy and ensures that government agents have to have a warrant supported by oath or affirmation before they search your home. Apparently, the Patriot Act eliminates that need and indicates that police agents can offer you that warrant 90 days after the fact, which makes it basically worthless. It eliminates the your right to due process and your right to assistance of counsel, because the government presumably can label you a terrorist, throw you in jail for an indefinite amount of time, and deny you a phone call or the right to an attorney. Now, if you are truly innocent until proven guilty, then it is quite impossible for you to be labeled a terrorist until after the trial. And one of the reasons that I am running for President of the United States is because of these blatant abuses of our civil rights and the fact that our government is ignoring the Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
I am Scott Horton, and this is the Weekend Interview Show. Our guest is Michael Badnarik, the Libertarian candidate president, Libertarian Party candidate for President of the United States. I have to edit that later. Michael, where do you stand on the issue of gun laws?
Well, the only valid gun law in the United States is the Second Amendment. 20,000 gun laws in the United States are unconstitutional. None of your listeners have ever filled out a government form that allows them to go to church. Nobody in your audience has a church permit. The idea is absolutely ludicrous. People do not require a permit in order to exercise a right. The same is, can be said for your right to keep and bear arms. You have a right to protect your life. You have a right to protect the lives of your children. And the government has no authority whatsoever to limit your ability to do so by making guns illegal or difficult to get, or by requiring you to have a permit in order to exercise that right. It is an oxymoron, and, you know, the idea of gun permits is just as ludicrous as the idea of a church permit.
Well, what about guns on airplanes? I think a lot of people are frightened that if people are allowed to carry guns on planes, that people are going to be getting shot and planes are going to be crashing all over the place.
Well, you have a right to protect yourself on the ground. I think that you also have a right to protect yourself in the air. The idea that having a bullet penetrate the hull of the aircraft is going to cause a massive depressurization and cause the airplane to crash is simply a result of people watching too much Hollywood movies. I know for a fact that is, you know, very unlikely, if not downright impossible. You know, if people are concerned, I think that airlines would be able to issue frangible ammunition, which would be able to deter attackers on the airplane without penetrating the pressure hull. And if I think that if people realize that if just a few people on each of those airplanes was armed and able to protect themselves on September 11th, the hijackers would never have gotten past the beverage cart. And quite frankly, if it was a widely known fact that Americans were able to protect themselves on aircraft, that the hijackers would never have attempted to perform such a hijacking.
Oh, that's a very interesting point, that they would have been deterred in the first place, you think?
Absolutely. You know, if Arnold Schwarzenegger and the, you know, little old lady are both walking down the street, you know, attackers are not likely to try to, you know, deprive Arnold Schwarzenegger of his wallet because, you know, he's large enough to protect himself. You know, evil people always attack the weak and the unprotected. And by having 20,000 gun laws in the United States, it basically requires people to be unprotected and, you know, basically creates victims of all of us.
And we know now that since September 11th, fighter jets have been scrambled over 100 times at least, maybe more than that, in order to perhaps intercept planes that were believed to be hijacked. So I guess the choice is between, if you do have hijackers on your plane, the choice is between the guy sitting next to you having a gun and shooting at them and F-16 putting a Sidewinder missile through your plane to prevent it from getting to its target.
Right. And, you know, given the options, I would much rather risk an errant bullet than I would, waiting for a Sidewinder missile to miss.
Okay, now we've got about a minute and a half before the next break, Michael. I'd like to give you a chance real quick to give us a libertarian position on the war on drugs, or your position.
The war on drugs is a dismal failure. Libertarians do not want their children to take drugs. We are frequently labeled as being pro-drug, and that's not true. Libertarians are anti-drug war. The war on drugs is a dismal failure. We have more drugs in the streets today than we did 50 years ago, and the war on drugs is a threat to our liberties. Police agents can search your home with based on an anonymous tip. They can take your property, sell it at 10 cents on the dollar, and then keep the money. And because of that motivation, it is estimated that at least 50% of our drug agencies in the United States are actually corrupt and are helping to promote the war on drugs rather than to end it.
Very good answer there. So, but what about, I mean, are people going to be able to buy crack at 7-Eleven?
Well, the idea that decriminalizing drugs is going to cause people to run naked and rampant through the streets is...
They already are, and they can buy it in front of 7-Eleven right now.
No.
All right, we'll be right back. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm your host, Scott Horton, and the guest is Michael Badnarik. He's the Libertarian Party candidate for President of the United States of America. Michael, what's your position on free trade?
I am fully in favor of free markets, which by definition is the law of supply and demand. Unfortunately, we don't have free trade or free markets in the United States. What we do have is something called free trade agreements, such as NAFTA and GATT. And the NAFTA all by itself is 22,000 pages of regulations which create a hostile economic environment in the United States, raising the cost of doing business, cutting significantly into the profit margin of most companies, who then are required to send their manufacturing and jobs offshore to other countries, which, not surprisingly, do not have regulations or have much easier regulations, just so they can stay solvent. The obvious solution is to eliminate NAFTA and GATT, allowing companies in the United States to do what they do best, and that is to provide goods and services at the cheapest price. And that would all by itself help to improve our economy.
So you think the outsourcing is primarily the effect of government intervention, not the free trade?
Absolutely. Anybody who says that we have free trade in the United States is obviously not paying attention. When Alan Greenspan can jockey the interest rate up or down, you know, we don't have free trade. Alan Greenspan clearly has more power than the President of the United States. If Alan Greenspan gets up in the morning and sneezes, the Japanese stock market drops 20 points that afternoon. And, you know, everybody is, you know, managing their investments based on, you know, what their best guess of not the market, but of Alan Greenspan. And if we were to eliminate the Federal Reserve, go back to a commodity-based currency such as gold and silver, then, you know, people would be able to predict what type of wealth they would have in the future. They'd be able to plan for their retirements much better. And the economy would be far more stable.
Michael Badnarik, Libertarian candidate for president. Any chance we're going to get to see you in the debates?
Well, we are certainly hopeful that I will be in the debates. I am planning to be in each of the cities where the debates are being held. That would be Miami, Florida, St. Louis, Missouri, and Tempe, Arizona. And at this point in time, our requests to participate in the debates have been rejected. George Bush and John Kerry will be participating in something that is supposed to resemble a debate. However, their questions will be scripted. Their answers will be scripted. The mock indignation between questions will be scripted. And it's not really a debate. It's more of a Broadway play. On the other hand, across the street, we plan to host a parallel debate between David Cobb of the Green Party, Michael Perutka of the Constitution Party, Ralph Nader of the Reform Party, and I, And the four of us will be debating and hopefully answering the same questions that are being asked across the street.
And hopefully giving much different answers.
Well, I can fairly guarantee that we'll be giving much different answers, and our answers will be spontaneous and off the cuff, whereas, you know, George Bush and John Kerry will be, you know, delivering rehearsed speeches.
Now, you're on the ballot in 48 states, right?
48 states and Washington, D.C. Unfortunately, we will not be on the ballot in Oklahoma or New Hampshire. In Oklahoma, the state required us to get so many signatures as to make it practically impossible to succeed. So the Libertarian position was to challenge the legitimacy of such requirements, and we currently have a lawsuit pending in court. However, I regret that we probably will not get a decision on that challenge until after November 2nd.
Wow, that wonderful court system always working for the public interest there. The phone number here is 1-800-313-9443. If anyone has a question for Michael Badnarik, after this break, we'll have about 15 more minutes to go before Michael, I'm sure, has a fundraising function to go to tonight. Again, that's 800-313-9443. And now, Mike, we talked a little bit about trade there, and tied in with that is the debate about immigration and border security. And this is something that especially this audience, I'm sure, is going to be very interested to hear your libertarian position on immigration.
Immigration is a multifaceted question, of course. One of the first parts of that issue is the hypocrisy of Americans at this point, ignoring or denying the necessity of having people come from Mexico to do jobs in the United States that are necessary and at wages that most Americans would basically turn down. If it was even possible to round up all of the Mexicans and move them back to Mexico, our economy would suffer and the economy of our border states would probably fail. The reason that many of these people are illegal immigrants is not because they are doing anything dangerous or they are a threat to Americans, but simply because it is much easier to swim the Rio Grande than it is to climb the mountain of paperwork required to become a legal citizen or a legal immigrant. And so the answer to this problem is to reduce that amount of paperwork, allow people to offer a photograph, an address, and a signature so that we know where they are, and allow them to come to do the work that we actually need them to do.
Great. Okay, and when we get back from this break, we'll get to the border security end of that same argument. This is the Weekend Interview Show. Our guest is Michael Badnarik. He's the Libertarian candidate for President of the United States.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott, and the guest is Michael Badnarik. He is the Libertarian Party candidate for President of the United States. Now, Michael, you say we should have an open immigration policy, but what about border security?
Well, I never said that we should have an open immigration policy, and I avoid saying that because it sounds like we're going to just take down all the borders and let people come and go. It's implausible to let everybody in, and it's also immoral to try to keep everybody out. You need to have some level of measure to keep out people who are known criminals and people who may be carrying diseases. But we do need to reduce the mountain of paperwork so that it makes it easy and possible for people to come here to so they can work hard and spend money. Now, the second part of this equation is the fact that there are currently people crossing the border, typically drug dealers who are coming into the United States. We have coyotes who are trafficking in human lives. And I'm also told that the factions of the Mexican military are crossing the border, and these groups are, you know, damaging American property and actually killing American civilians. You know, I'd like to point out that the only valid purpose for the American government is to protect the lives, liberty, and property of Americans. And so, rather than having 150,000 troops damaging property and killing innocent civilians of in Iraq. We need to have a border patrol, not to keep people out because they're swimming across the river, but to track down and prosecute people who are coming into the United States and committing crimes.
You differentiate then between people who are just breaking the law by coming in and people who are criminals in other senses.
Well, absolutely. You know, many of our laws create criminals, the people who are doing, you know, nothing wrong and are not injuring someone else. Many of our drug laws, for example, make it a crime simply to possess a small amount of marijuana. You know, these people haven't hurt anybody. They are generally known as victimless crimes, and victimless crimes is an oxymoron within the libertarian philosophy. If there is no victim, by definition, there is no crime.
All right, if anybody wants to get involved on the air and ask a question of Michael Badnarik, we have him for about another 10 minutes, and the phone number is 1-800-313-9443, 800-313-9443. Let's go ahead and take a question from Hank in San Antonio.
Hello, Scott and Michael.
Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. Michael, I have a thought here. I'm sure that people may get a little nervous, for example, about folks carrying guns on the airplanes. And I would think that the way to approach that is that we have a contract with the airline. And if the airline says, you want to fly on my airplane, then here are the rules. And the rules might be, well, if you're going to carry a weapon, it has to be unloaded, or it has to be in your baggage, or they can set up whatever rules they want. And you accept that as a contract item. And and if you accept it, then you follow those rules. And if you don't accept it, you have to go fly with somebody else.
Well, that sounds like a really good idea to me. Unfortunately, we accidentally lost Mike. We're going to get him back on the air here in just a second. But what you're saying presumes private security, which we know that the security has now been nationalized for air travel.
Well, that's the biggest problem is that we have nationalized everything. And Michael was talking about the victimless crimes before the break, or I guess just after the break. And we have so many of them. Virtually all of our traffic laws now are victimless crimes. I mean, it doesn't make any difference whether you're going 60 miles an hour or 70 miles an hour in a 60 zone. If you're not harming anybody, if you're not interfering with other people's travel, then you have not committed any wrong.
Well, I definitely tend to agree with you about that. Michael, you're back on the air now?
I am back on the air.
Okay, now the question was, what about when we're talking about guns on airplanes, what about if it's all just private that you have to sign your paperwork, you make a deal with the airline that if this is a gun-toting airline, then you sign your contract and declare your weapon, and everything's all good as long as it's all private and above board and in writing.
Absolutely. And I would also like to point out that if an airline continues to refuse you the opportunity to defend yourself, then the airline subsumes responsibility for your safety.
Exactly.
And the airline has now had the ability to make sure that their airplane is not hijacked, and they need to provide some level of security. And it would be up to each individual person to decide which airline they would choose to fly. Now, if there were ever an airline in the United States which allowed me to carry my .45 on the airplane so that I can protect myself and potentially the other passengers on the airplane, that is the only airline that I would fly.
That's my thought about that, Michael. Is that you really have a contract with the airline when you buy the ticket.
And absolutely,
they have certain guidelines that they will allow you on their vehicle. Just as if you had someone to carry in your car, you were driving someplace, and you said, "Well, look,
yes,
in my car there's no smoking," or whatever the reason is. Then you and the driver or the owner of the airplane have that contract.
So see, now we've made that null and void by nationalizing the airline security, and now the onus is no longer on the airlines to provide the security because now the taxpayer is going to take care of that for them.
Right. Of course, we don't get any security; we just get oppression, and that's the biggest problem with nationalizing all these things.
Well, I know from secondhand information that a Sky Marshal was allowed to go through security with the 357. However, the security deprived him of his nail clippers. Now, that does not that does not border on insanity. That has long since crossed the line.
Exactly.
Thank you very much for the call, Hank. Anybody else wants to ask a question of Michael Badnarik, the number is 1-800-313-9443, 313-9443. And, in fact, speaking of the nail clippers thing, I read somewhere about the volume of stolen goods that had been recovered by the bosses from the underlings at the nationalized airline security, and how they just had boxes full of items stolen by these new federal cops who are guarding our lives.
Giving the impression that they are guarding our lives.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And let's see. Oh, I read something the other day, Michael, that made me think of you. Don't take this wrong. but the poll said that when they asked the people which candidate they like better for domestic issues such as health care, education, welfare, the environment, and such like that, that the people overwhelmingly supported John Kerry. And, of course, when it comes to foreign policy and who do you trust to protect you from terrorism, they all answered Bush. Now, as a libertarian, this all seems very counterintuitive to me, but I thought I'd give you an opportunity to maybe answer particularly maybe some of these Democrat-leaning voters who tend to like Kerry for health care, education, and the environment, questions like that. What's your libertarian response to their mistake?
Well, the Democrats have a tendency to be in favor of personal freedoms and violate your economic freedoms. The Republicans tend to be just the reverse. They protect your economic freedom and tend to limit or violate your personal freedom. The libertarians, on the other hand, are a mixture of both of those. We support your private, your personal freedoms and your economic freedoms. So for those people who are confused because libertarians are liberal on some issues and conservative on other issues, that's true. Basically, all of our positions are based on individual rights and personal responsibility.
Classical liberalism and paleoconservatism at the same time.
That's correct.
And, you know, it's funny, actually, if you really think about it, the root word of liberal is liberty, and conservatism, like, obviously, conserve what? Well, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and small government and low taxes and individual liberty, right?
Absolutely. Our platform, when I talk about the Constitution, individual rights, and private property. And in 2 years of campaigning, I've never had a single person argue with that position.
You know, again, Bush, on the foreign policy, the American people are under the impression that there's no better hands for American foreign policy to be in than George W. Bush.
Well, I understand that many Americans will sleep better knowing that George Bush and his army are going out and stomping other people into the ground. However, just because people like that idea does not make it ethical. We do not have the authority to be the policemen of the world. And as we go around, we have military in over 135 countries around the world. We are using our military influence to influence other governments, to influence other economies. And politically, we are poking other countries in the eye with a sharp stick. We don't have the authority to do that. As Americans, we want to be left alone so that we can live our lives as Americans. If we truly believe in liberty, we have an obligation to allow other countries to organize the governments the way they want, recognizing, of course, that it's very unlikely that they will organize their governments exactly like ours, at least at the beginning. It's not possible to export democracy at the point of a gun. The only way that we can do it, if we are to be successful at all, is to demonstrate democracy by example.
They say the fax machine is what destroyed the Soviet Union.
I hadn't heard that, but that sounds like a plausible explanation. Information in the hands of everyday citizens is the best protection against government tyranny.
Very good, Anand. It's 4:15. I know you've got to get going.
Thank you very much.
I sure appreciate
you allowing me to express my views on the air.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the air very much, sir.
Thanks so much.
Everybody, the candidate with a 45, Michael Badnarik, the libertarian, running for president of the United States.